Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, on this Tuesday, August 15th. And today we're going to be learning about the new National Research Reserve, known as Heia National Estuarine Research Reserve. It's a system, one of the systems across the whole nation. This is the 29th reserve and the first one in more than 6 years. With us today to talk about this important area is Dr. Robert Tonin, Christina Kekuava, and Koa Schultz. Diving right in, we are first going to talk with our favorite returning guest, Dr. Rob Tonin from the University of Hawaii's Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Dr. Tonin is an assistant research professor who specializes in dispersal and recruitment of invertebrate larvae, population genetics, and evolution and ecology of marine invertebrates. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Carly.
So, Rob, tell us first a little bit about this important reserve and how this designation process came to be.
Well, I think that's something that Koa will be able to talk to, because actually this reserve is, I think, very different than other previous reserves in that the push for designation is actually something that came from the community and was basically then, it's a partnership between NOAA and a state partner, typically a university, for the designation process. And this is something where the community actually came to the university and asked us to get involved and help with this designation process, rather than the university sort of leading that designation process with NOAA and then telling the community about it.
And that's a very unique thing. And how does that work for managing or implementing the reserve if the community initiates this process?
So in this case, the designation of a reserve actually does not change any of the management authority or the agencies who are involved with that management. And so the land owners of the area that is within the designation, so the Hawaii Community Development Authority, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, those agencies are still responsible for the management of those lands and the rules that apply to those lands. But what really is different about the NEARS is that it basically gives us the glue to tie together all of these community partners who have been working on restoration efforts in this area to remove alien invasive species, to put back traditional practices for managing this area, and to document through the research question, what exactly effect does that have on the nearshore fisheries and coral reef waters of Kaneohe Bay.
So it's mostly providing more teeth, or I guess more resources, to the already existing efforts that are taking place.
And that's exactly what it is a federal NOAA state partnership where NOAA provides 70% of the operating budget for this site. The state matches the other 30% of the total operating budget. And this is a long-term partnership for a research question, and which in this case, the research question is really what drives this site. And so the research question is basically, does contemporary federal management practices, the way that we typically manage the land and sea resources of this area, does that provide more ecosystem services that the people of Kaneohe and Hawaii want from this area? Or do restoring traditional Native Hawaiian practices that were realized under the Ahupua'a system, does that actually provide a better management strategy that will provide for healthier waters in terms of the nearshore fisheries and coral reef health in this area?
So this is very exciting, because this could serve as an example or a model that can be implemented in other locations.
Well, and I think that's exactly what our hope is, and that why it's such an interesting and exciting research question from our perspective is the possibility of serving as an example. And also, particularly, if we can do this on Oahu, then really this should be able to export anywhere. That Oahu wouldn't necessarily be the first place that people think about restoring a traditional Ahupua'a and the management practices that go with that. And so I think the opportunities here to demonstrate what that change in management strategy and what the ecosystem services that it provides is a really phenomenal opportunity from our perspective, and what keeps me so excited about this and the some of the things that, that Cole will talk about in a little while, I'm sure, when you talk to him.
Sure. So the different reserves that are, exist, I think we said there's 29 of them, including this one. Do they all operate under this community-driven approach, or is this sort of a unique example?
I think this is a very unique example. So this is something that when we go to the NEAR system every year, they have a meeting with all of the sites, and everyone gets together and talks about the challenges and shared vision and sharing of data and so on. And other sites are very interested and very excited about the fact that there's so much community involvement and investment in this site that is unusual in most other sites. In most places, the university has formed a partnership with NOAA and then gone out and tried to recruit community members to participate in this. And it's something that other sites, some of them, actually struggle with. In this case, we have this amazing partnership with individual groups, Paipai'o'ohe'ia, Kako'o'i'iwi, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, that have been working together for decades, and that these groups have been trying to accomplish some of these goals. This designation now gives us a formal partnership and long-term resources to try to further those beyond what each individual group is capable of doing on their own.
Excellent. Well, this is a really exciting time for this. And is the reserve already in place, or when do we expect for this designation to happen?
So the designation was just completed. January 19th of this year was the final steps of the designation. The designation process is actually a very long-term process. So it began in 2012. When the governor approached NOAA about getting a designation based on the input from the community that's something the state of Hawaii would like to see. The Office of Planning was instrumental in leading that entire process from 2012 with the site selection committee that had to evaluate all of the different sites, to pick the preferred site, to go through the public meetings, to scope out what the public support was, feedback from the community about possible boundaries and what those boundaries would end up looking like, and then all of the actual draft management plan and draft environmental impact assessments that would had to be completed between the initial nomination of the site back in 2012 and its eventual designation this past January.
Excellent. So quite a long process and a big reward at the end of that process.
That's right.
So we've talked a little bit about the actual designation and what that means, but what about this research question, and what is biologically important about this region?
Well, I think this area is an estuary, and so as with all of the sites in the national system, it's following water from pure freshwater on land to the place where it mixes with the sea. What makes Hawaii particularly unique is that our entire watershed from Mauka to Makai is very short. So on most places on the mainland, when you would follow water from the crest of the mountain in Colorado out to the ocean, that's not something you're going to walk in an afternoon. That is different in Hawaii, where you can literally follow water that would land on the peaks of the mountains, down through the stream, into the lohe, out to the fish pond, and out onto the reef in an afternoon walk. And that's something that no one else anywhere in the country can actually say. And it gives us the opportunity to look at this really amazing and unusual system and ask the question, how we manage things. Can we make changes on land? Do our decisions about how we manage that impact what we get out of our nearshore resources, our fisheries and our coral reefs? And can we have a better system than what we're doing right now? Because a lot of people complain that what we're doing is as sort of we go along is watching the decline of coral reefs. And that's something that we are hoping that we can demonstrate with this site is actually not only stopping that, but actually reversing it and having healthier, more productive nearshore fisheries.
It sounds incredible and gives a whole new definition to top-down management, right? And so because you're working in this diverse area and looking holistically at the entire system, I imagine you must be working with a lot of different scientists and experts to better understand how all of these systems are interacting with each other.
Well, and it's a lot of scientists, it's a lot of groups, and it's not just scientists, actually, and that's something that Koa will be able to speak to. We have one of the best natural systems in terms of human knowledge of how management for 1,000 years prior to today has functioned with a fantastically sustainable ecosystem, and there was an amazingly complex and well-developed management system in place here for 800 years before Western contact that supported people. We don't have to recreate this from scratch. We can learn from the past, and that's a really important lesson and the guidance from the kupuna and from the input of learning from the past to not make the same mistakes all over again and to try and move that forward is one of the critical goals of this particular site, is the direct feedback between modern science and traditional knowledge and learning from the past in order to develop the most effective management system that we can possibly have today.
It sounds like the best of both worlds and being able
really,
to incorporate
I think, the
it
goal.
All. Yeah. And so has that already been in existence where managers and kupuna and community are working with scientists together, or is this something that's new to the region?
I think it has been in existence with individuals and small scale for a while, but this opportunity basically now gives us 1,385 acres of the He'ia Ahupua that we can actually try as a collective, all of the groups, all of the nonprofits, the university, NOAA, all of the different agencies that are involved with HCDA and DLNR to work together and ask the question, can we actually change, can we restore a traditional Ahupua'a to the management system that was recognized under the Ili'i system? And can we actually show an improvement in nearshore fisheries and sustainable harvest of these resources following that management strategy as opposed to the management strategy that we're currently applying, which has resulted in an ecosystem that's dominated by alien invasive species and provides very little in the way of ecosystem services that most people in this area want.
Sure. So what are the first steps to making that happen, or what are the first things you'll be looking at to implement?
Well, since designation, the first step was working with NOAA to figure out all of the compliance and paperwork and all of those sorts of things that come along with this. We are finally just now through that process.
Got to dot the I's and cross the T's.
That has been an important part of this. And so the next steps really are hiring some permanent staff who will really lead the charge on this effort and coordinate the efforts between some fantastic groups that have been working in this area already for a long time and have done amazing things with their individual properties. So Kakoi Ivi with restoring the Loi, Paipai Oheia with restoring the fish pond. Those efforts are already underway and have been going on for a long time. Now we can start to partner with those and have some staff whose job is to make sure that all of those efforts sort of pull, basically mesh seamlessly and pull in the same direction so that we can see, can we get all 1,385 acres to be the productive, traditional, native wetland that was recognized, 200 years ago, as opposed to this alien species dominated landscape that we see right now that is not providing the same ecosystem services.
Sure. And in terms of showing the effectiveness of this, I know there's already quite a bit of monitoring and research that has taken place in the area, will that sort of serve as a baseline for comparison, or how will you demonstrate those differences?
Well, and that's actually one of the things that the Site Selection Committee viewed as one of the major advantages of Kanehoe Bay when we were looking at potential sites around the state, was the number of studies and the baseline information, the partnerships that already exist, and that that information will now play forward as we look at large-scale alien species removal and restoration efforts. What impact does that have? How does that change water quality? How does that change species distributions and abundances? And what impacts do those have on floodwater pulses, sediments, and nutrients coming off the land into the near shore?
And how would you say the health of the reef or the near shore marine environment is currently in the location?
Well, Kaneohe Bay has had a very complicated history over the last 100 years, that prior to Western contact, the oral history of this place is that it has withstood a great deal of harvest pressure without much change for hundreds of years, that there was very little change to the place. Over the last 100 years, with dredging, with urbanization, with the input of fresh water and nutrients, the development of a sewage treatment plant that dumped directly into Kaneohe Bay, the bay has seen phenomenal changes. And so I would describe it as a system in recovery right now from something in 1976 that had almost no coral cover and did not function in the same way as it had 100 years previously, to now being in the process of rebounding. But we also have a lot of other stresses. There's still a lot of people. There's still a lot of nutrients being put in there. There are a lot of cesspools in the area that are adding nutrients to it. And we've got climate change thrown on top of all of this, and we've just seen three of the largest bleaching events in our history have happened in the last few years. So on top of all of that, the timing for this effort couldn't be better, because if we don't change something, we're going to watch it go backwards, not forwards. And that's what everyone in this effort wants to see, is a resilient, productive ecosystem that provides the services that everyone wants.
Absolutely. And when you have a supportive community, that's half the battle, because everyone's invested in what's happening.
I think that's more than half the battle, because we can try and preach from the high pedestal of an academic, you know, writing papers all we want. If the community doesn't believe in it and doesn't want that, we'll never accomplish it. And so the fact that this effort came from the community, not the other way around, I think is one of the most important parts of this partnership, and what I think is going to be key to the long-term success of this effort.
It's a really good point, and something that I don't think always gets acknowledged is, how has the community involvement influenced the research that's taking place from the scientists in the area? How has that influenced your work or others' work through the university?
Well, I think it has been part of a learning process from both sides. So, you know, some people have to understand how the science works and what the researchers are trying to do from the community side, just as much as the scientists have to understand what the community is interested in and why they want to have information. And this is something actually that this site, one of the key components of this partnership, is working with the community to say, what are the questions that are really pressing for the community? And let's get graduate students or university researchers specifically involved in understanding those questions. And so the NEARS itself will serve to take Kupuna knowledge and wisdom with the questions that are facing the on-the-ground resource managers today, and then partner that with researchers who can address the critical questions to say, well, how do we actually address some of these problems that we're facing? And again, to me, that's one of the most exciting things about this particular effort.
Yeah. And you mentioned students as well. I mean, having the opportunity to work on such a unique project is such an opportunity. Will there be student involvement both at the university and maybe at the college or high school level?
And that's certainly yes on to all of those things. So the goal is to actually fund graduate student level university researchers mm-hmm. to work on projects there. And one of the staff positions at the NEARS, there is a resource manager, there is a research coordinator, and there's an education coordinator. And the research coordinator would oversee all of the research efforts. The education coordinator would then oversee all of the efforts that have to do with, you know, kindergarten through our state policymakers, trying to educate them about what's going on in Haiya, what the issues are, and what the best way for people to manage that resource are, and educate the community as much as possible, both from the science side and the culture side. And that's something that COA will certainly be able to address more.
I love that. Education K through gray.
Yeah.
It's an important effort. Thank you so much, Rob. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more about this incredible effort.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Larson really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a time out for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool. To call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking about Hawaii's new Haiya National Estuarine Research Reserve. With us now is Koa Schultz, the Kaneohe Bay Marine Coordinator with the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii and Executive Director of Kako'o'iwi. Welcome to the show.
Aloha.
So we've been talking about the reserve and a little bit about the community effort and how this came from the community. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the history and the work that came to be to make this possible?
Yeah, I mean, it all starts, there are a lot of great kupuna that are from Kaneohe and from He'eia. And it started with their process of fighting to protect He'eia in the 70s. From there, different organizations have come into He'eia and become part of the nonprofits, whether it's Pai Pai o He'eia or Kako'o'iwi or Papahana Ko'ola. The Ko'olau Foundation. I mean, there's just a lot of activity and a lot of great people doing things in there. As we were moving forward with the restoration or the protection of parts of He'eia, we realized we needed additional support. And with our partners at NOAA, who are already operating, and our partners at HIMB, we heard about the NUR. And there's also actually in the 1970s, Kaneohe Bay Master Plan, they actually talked about bringing a NUR to Kaneohe. And so with those steps and the footsteps that our kupuna have laid for us already, it made sense to start a NUR, especially with the late senator still around. We felt we could push through and get things moving. And that's kind of how it came to be. Looking at different federal partners, we wanted to have a opportunity where we can continue to practice, continue to feed, continue to interact with the environment. And we saw that the NUR designation and the way that is implemented and moved forward seemed to be the best tool that we could use with our federal partners to protect this area.
Sure. I think that's really important because a lot of times when management or regulation comes in, there's concern that it will change the way of life or the way that people are operating. But this is just really to improve upon and build off this community effort.
The great thing about the NUR is that it provides education. And education is what is key for moving our entire community forward. So seeing a federal tool that could be used so effectively for perpetuation of culture, perpetuation of fishing resources, perpetuation of land management, and then also providing some of the best knowledge for the future, you know, to make us resilient as climate and other issues will come up in the world. That's the best way that we can prepare our children. So
absolutely. And I mean, this effort, I didn't realize it had been going on since the 70s. So that is a long history, even just there in terms of wanting some implementation of the NER. So why this area? We kind of touched on it with Rob, but maybe you could talk a little more about the natural and cultural features that make this system worthy for selection.
I think goes back to the question, looking at what an Ahupua'a system can be used as we move together with, you know, I hate to say contemporary and traditional because both are contemporary management systems. And so moving forward together with different tools to better Hawaii is our goal and what we really want to see. And so the question that Rob asks, the question that we ask is really important as how are our kids going to move forward in the 21st century, 22nd century, 23rd century. And so now I'm looking at you guys going into a blank, but no. But it's really, how do we move forward? I mean, I'll keep saying it, right? As we protect this land, as we move forward together, it's a really important process. So
the Apua'a system that's being included in this.
So the features that really make it important, obviously, is the fact that so many things were laid and were protected in the 70s. So as you walk in the lands of Kakoiwi or the lands of Hoi, Heiauli, you can still see a lot of the traditional structures that were left by our ancestors. When you look out into the ocean, you can still see the ko'a, the different types of reefs. You can still see the actual fish pond present. Even as you go out to HIMB, Moko'olo'e, you know, you still have a lot of the wahipana present. And because we have such a great resource with the kupuna that are there, they can continue to transition and pass on those knowledge pieces, you know, 3-4 generations back. Are still, you know, we can still kind of tap into that knowledge. And so it's really looking at what makes He'ea so special is that there are multiple knowledge sources present in that Ahupua'a, whether it's our great partners at HIMB or the kupuna that are still present and able to speak about why it's Kala'io Malulani versus Kaneohe Bay, why it's, talking about different resources within He'ea.
Sure.
And that is actually the jewel of the system, is that knowledge. And the NER, again, only enhances that knowledge.
Absolutely. So how are you documenting or bringing this knowledge together to be this comprehensive understanding?
From a contemporary system, obviously we're recording it via pictures, images, but we really are documenting the knowledge by having the actions that are occurring in the land go forward and move forward. So we're documenting the knowledge by actually implementing strategies that were done in the past. We're documenting the knowledge by implementing those strategies, but also looking and testing currently with science and how, and again, our ancestors were great scientists also. So it's just, again, finding that balance and testing that. Obviously, with the education coordinator, cultural coordinator, the Marine Reserve manager, they'll all be tasked to help to educate and perpetuate the knowledge of He'ea, whether it's looking at larval disbursement or connectivity of Oʻopu finally going up to the upper stream systems, restoration and reestablishment of a native wetland system, which does require the removal of other species. These tasks that we're trying to implement, which we know and were set by our kupuna, are all tools that we can then share, or tools that we can implement, and then the results we can share with the rest of the community, whether it's around Oahu, Hawaii, or our other NER partners. And so, it's, you know, makahanaka ike and work, there's knowledge. We're just going to keep pushing that forward and seeing how everything changes. And with the NER and the science,
sure,
we can document it. With the culture, we can also document it.
Right.
Via mo'olelo song.
Many ways of sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you talk a little bit about implementing the strategies of the past, and I can think of some really obvious examples with the restoration of the fish pond that's taking place. But what are maybe some lesser known efforts that have been or going to take place as part of this?
The easier part of it for myself is the implementation of what our ancestors saw. So we have that 1928 aerial image of showing He'ea in a certain state. We're able to walk that path to restore to that image. And then the next question is, then where do we go from there? Do we build the local ia differently, the fish ponds? Do we build the taro, the lo'i kalo differently? Do we integrate more rice? Because that was in the, you know, it's just these questions that we need to ask. And the hope is that as our cultural sides grow, our cultural knowledge grows about the area. Also, all aspects of knowledge will also grow with it. And then together we can ask the question about how do we improve it for the future. And if we have done our job correctly and we pass on, our kids can take it with the knowledge that we've been able to gain, and then they can make the decisions with the best tools present.
Sure. Well, for those of us who haven't had the pleasure of being able to see some of these images from the 1920s or hear about what the place looked like, can you verbally describe some of the differences between what the place looks like now and maybe what was shown in those images in the 1920s?
Kaneohe and Hei are still very beautiful, but what you saw at one time was Kamehameha Highway was present in 1928, but the mangrove, which is a non-native species on both sides of the property, we're not there. So we have Mo'olelo from Auntie Carol and from Auntie Alice and Uncle, you know, Clement, where they talked about the sound of rain. And it wasn't the sound of rain coming down. It was the sound of mullet splashing up the river. And all of that splashing basically sounded like raindrops coming up the river. They talk about a lot more open spaces. They talk about hearing a lot more endangered birds. Ai'o, alai ula, alai keokeo. And fortunately for us, our kids are now hearing those sounds again. Those birds have returned.
It's
but it's really about doing that. And then also to hit home is the flavors of the fish, the flavors of different animals and things that were there. So it's very much about being part of the land, eating from the land, but also taking care of that land. So it's a much different, you know, resource extraction, but also resource, I know Momona, taking care of it, making it very rich. So those are the kinds of things that we're fortunate to be able to hear and be able to have. I know I'm going on a tangent.
No, but to me, that's so interesting, having that historical sensory experience. Yeah.
So
that
it's just,
you can share.
Just like when you go to He'ea, the one of the winds is called Mololani, and it comes usually out of Mokapu, and it's a beautiful wind. When you go to our site, or when you go to the fish pond, you feel the wind now. When you go to our site, you don't feel the wind yet because the mangrove is still blocking it. You know, there's different Ho'elona and different Kinola of different species that were present that our kids don't see. So if we don't hear the birds, then we are unable to interact as much with our kupuna. Having those native species return are direct ways that we can then communicate with our ancestors and our kupuna. So these are all methods of, what does it look like? It's kind of trying to rebuild it to that image.
Yeah, that was a really great description. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. What I mean, for some people in the public, you know, preserving nature, that just means protecting what's there. And there's not always an awareness that what's there may not be what was there originally. Or, you know, when you talk about the invasive algae that's in Kaneohe Bay or the mangroves, how do those restoration efforts affect that? Is there removal of some of the invasive species to restore native plants and native species, or how is that approached?
Yeah, I mean, our approach is to protect the native systems that were present previously, you know, in the 18th century, in the Mo'olelo that we can read about. And so if mangrove was planted in 1918, I think, in He'ea, we were able to then kind of look before what it was, in before 1918. So though we acknowledge mangrove is a beautiful plant and an important plant, we think the native ecosystem of the sedge grasses, the lowland wetland sedge systems that were present before that, is also as equally important. And so it is the process of removing certain invasive species, but being smart about it, not just clear-cutting the entire thing at one time,
sure,
but looking at how you know, the leaf litter that is created by the mangrove, does it just flow out? So it's utilizing your partnerships with NOAA, with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, with Army Corps of Engineers, and figuring out the most effective tools to clear these invasive species so that we don't do more harm, and then following that process later. And then also bringing in the kupuna and the different ones to say, okay, what are you feeling? What are you seeing? How are you interacting? Like, you know, just looking at quantitative and qualitative assessments that we can integrate within the NUR. And again, the beauty of the NUR is that it balances and acknowledges all aspects of knowledge,
sure,
and makes it equal and move forward together. And it's with our federal government. So who could have thought? No.
Big changes. Well, that's incredible. And because there's no additional restrictions put or protections put into this plan, will a new management plan be developed, or is it mostly working with the existing community input to help protect.
I think the way the NERA was designed was to ensure that it wasn't top-down, it was bottom-up. And so the nonprofits that have leases or agreements with the landowners will continue to have those leases honored. And so you won't see any, there will be no regulatory changes in the NERA. With the questions that are asked, and you know, if things are happening where we can clearly see that the knowledge is telling us to change our actions, then we'll go back to the broader community. But the autonomy is still held within each of the lease lands or the landowners. So obviously for Kako'iwi, if there is issues that need to be changed with how we do our management practices, then it comes to the group, and then Kako'iwi will also change. For Paipai, it's the same issue. But in terms of extraction, use, education, it's all part of the same thing. That will continue on and hopefully be perpetuated so that we can actually see the fish again come up the river and we can start to see the areas there.
One of the things that I think is really unique about this and to me is very impressive is it's not just the community putting input in and then people running with that and moving forward, but it's a continued community effort, yeah. Which I think is quite unique. How are you involving the community moving forward? Can new people who haven't been involved now join this effort?
Absolutely, yeah. So because the boards of the different nonprofits, a lot of them are from the community, there's a direct involvement with families and kupuna from that area. Each of the groups have community work days, whether it's on first Saturday, second Saturday, or third Saturday. So there's always avenues for people to engage. In addition, with Hauli Mauloa, which is another funding organization, they've actually helped to support three of the nonprofits to get together to develop Aina education. So we can say that He'e Elementary, Kaneohe Elementary, Pu'ahala, Anuenue, they all are coming in to do Aina-based education, which obviously wasn't done by the NER, but it will definitely be supported with our education coordinators, right? So it's kind of like the community's been moving for a long time. They've been rolling for it. Our federal partners are just, as they are, a partner in this process. They don't garner the support, they don't control the process, but they're very much important to building our hui together, you know. So each member brings a piece, and whether it's the federal government, HIMB, or other nonprofits, we try and keep it as level and even as we can. We are, of course, grateful for the support.
Of course.
But it's like, you know, we're all in it together, so.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
So you mentioned community work days. Can you talk a little bit about what those entail?
Obviously, the fish pond, it's amazing there. And with Paipau He'ea, with Hi'ile Kavelu and Keli Ikotubete, the EDs, they're basically there to help for the restoration of the fish pond, whether it's removing alien algae or actually rebuilding the wall,
mm-hmm.
Just different aspects of community work. For Kako'o'iwi, their community work day relies more heavily on opening up traditional lo'i systems, removing invasive species. We'll be doing a future project with HIMB, UH. So I always want to include all of UH, not just HIMB, but, you know. but just the parts of the system where we will start to utilize the mangrove. And hopefully for communities that come out, we might be able to share that resource with different organizations. For Papahana Kuola, which is obviously outside of the NERA, but still a very important nonprofit, you'll do a lot of stream restoration, lo'i restoration, invasive species removal. Ko'ola Foundation, which is even higher, also you're doing a lot of invasive species removal, which is why, as a NORA partners graciously acknowledged, invasive species is one of the first things as we're doing within the NERA to remove things, is just getting the slate cleared so that then we can start to really look at what's there now and how to replace that with traditional systems.
Excellent.
So those are kind of projects of what they're doing.
Well, there's a lot to
do. Yeah, there's a lot to do.
Many hands make light work.
Absolutely.
Laulima. And you talk about the Aina-based education. The classrooms participate in these work days or work programs as well?
More so for Hulia Mahi, which is what the program is. It's to develop Aina-based education. So looking at the standards within, and again, our education teams are way smarter than I am, so I don't want to say something too wrong. But it's really about getting the kids to experience at multiple visits Aina so that then they develop that relationship, whether it's through leadership or whether it's through invasive species or science. It's just getting them exposed again from our schools, getting our school kids exposed again to land and aina. So then they feel very much part of He'ea. Yeah. And so we're grateful for that support.
Well, and I'm sure the students and teachers are too, because
they're pretty amazing things.
Amazing resources and opportunities for them there. Excellent. Well, so much to learn. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about education and some of the community involvement. Okay.
You know, we can do anything. We're smart and strong. The last thing we need is something to slow us down. So here's something everyone should know. UV rays from the sun can hurt your skin. Even a few serious sunburns can increase your chances of getting skin cancer. So choose your cover. Use sunscreen with at least SPF 15 with UVA and UVB protection. Cover up with clothing or find some shade. As long as we protect our skin from the sun, we can keep reaching for the stars.
Brought to you by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
We're coming back. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal, and we are talking about Hawaii's new He'ea National Estuarine Research Reserve. With us now is Christina Kekoeva, the Regional Director for the NOAA Office of Coastal Management for the Pacific Islands. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so hard to go after Rob and Koa, but I will try my best.
Well, we're really happy you could make it here. It's nice to have representation from all the different partners, and it's been a really interesting show to talk a little bit about the different perspectives and history of how this has come together. So from your standpoint, at what point did NOAA get involved in the process of this designation, and what is your role with all of this?
Well, NOAA became officially involved in the designation process when Governor Abercrombie sent in the letter of intent to NOAA. And so that really is what started the official process. Now, like Rob and Koa said, there's really been community involvement since the 70s. So, of course, we have heard that the community was very interested in having a NERS in Hawaii, as well as our regional office and national office. So we have our national office in our East Coast headquarters, and they really are the stewards of the 29 sites, and they really help with the national resources. And then my role is here in Hawaii and in the Pacific to really represent that national outlook here on the ground.
Excellent. And I mean, this reserve seems so unique and special, not that all the other reserves are not. Does it feel different to be working on a more community-driven reserve for this particular site?
I think so. I can't even imagine what this process would have been like if the community hadn't been really the instigators and the constant supporters of the process. It really makes it such a meaningful part of what we're doing here, and is really the reason that NOAA has people, you know, in the regions and on the ground to make these connections and provide the support for these types of engagements.
So, I mean, a lot of the community and the public is familiar with large-scale marine protected areas that have received, you know, a lot of attention, like the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument. What makes the NERS system a little bit different, and what's the criteria that it needs to have?
NERS is a little bit different because, as we mentioned, it's really the state asks for NERS process to begin. And then on top of that, the state actually runs the process. So we had our State Office of Planning here in Hawaii run the process, and NOAA was a partner during this. And some of these other programs that you mentioned you know, it may be a different process. I'm really best familiar with ours.
Sure.
But really what the NERS network is looking for is how, you know, from the national perspective, how do we protect estuaries and learn the most we can about them so that we can continue moving forward in protection? So when looking at a new site, they really want a unique biogeography, so something that will add a new location or new contribution. And I actually have a list of things here. So they want to make sure that there's strong value for research monitoring and research protection. Is suitable for training, education, and interpretive activities, and is comprised of public land that is compatible for this land use. But again, I think the underlying thought is that we would never want to even pursue looking at a site if there wasn't the community support. And
sure.
That's why we really need the state to set forth the process, but also the community to be there in through the entire process, through the public meetings and the scoping process.
Excellent. And this is the only site here in Hawaii, correct?
Correct.
And is the hope that we'll be able to get more sites in the state after the success or after working with this particular site for a while?
Of course, of course. I think there are definitely some biogeographies that are still missing in our network. So in the national aspect, I think they would like to see those sites filled. But from the Pacific outlook, I think there are definitely room for other NERS sites that could contribute different uniquenesses to the overall network.
Sure. And does the NERS protection, in your opinion, you know, raise more awareness of the site? Like, what are some of the benefits of this added designation?
Well, for sure, there's more national resources, I think, and state resources. So, I mean, it is an amazing thing to realize when, you know, we made it through this designation process together. I think, you know, there were many things that had to be done and done correctly in order to I think, be true to a public process and to do right by the community and to our national program ideals as well. So by the time we made it through, I think we all took a moment and we stepped back and we said, together we've been able to bring close to $1 million new dollars to our state and to this site per year. So to me, that is significant.
That is extremely significant. That is a huge help. Does the designation last forever? Does it have to be renewed?
It is in perpetuity, but I also like to say that I think it's like any good relationship, right? You need to have everyone involved still benefiting and feeling like this is a positive relationship. So if there became a point in time that maybe that was not the case, and the state is allowed to divest from it, but we're hoping, you know, with the strength of the beginning mm-hmm. of the designation, you know, I am very hopeful that we will continue on for a very, very long time.
Sure. And I know it's early days, too. And one of the questions I had thought of is, you know, are there long-term plans for biological monitoring? But, you know, talking with everyone, it's not just the biological monitoring. There's a lot happening here. So all of the documentation and efforts that are happening, will that data be publicly available or how will that be shared?
Absolutely. I think in 1995, there was a system-wide monitoring program put together by the National NERS Program. We like to call it SWAMP.
We always need an acronym.
Yes.
We always need an acronym.
And one that you can say out loud is an extra bonus.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1995 doesn't seem that long ago to me, but when you look at it now, it's over 20 years of data that's been collected in our different sites. And so we're really looking forward to adding the Hawaii data onto that, but it is available for everyone and definitely with the purpose of having a collection be very cohesive and available to the public.
Excellent. That's wonderful. And we talked a lot about educating communities and working with the community, with COA and Rob. How does NOAA get involved in this community and education engagement?
Well, NOAA provides some funding and technical assistance. So I think, you know, all of the NOAA programs and education activities that exist already are definitely there to help supplement what is already going on. But as Koa mentioned, the work that is already going on in education, the site is really significant. And we're really lucky to be able to just help support what they're currently doing.
So there's a lot of emphasis on the community and place-based education for this specific area. Why is having this place-based education so important?
Well, I think anyone who has kids or remembers being a kid can remember what it was like to have a field trip. For me, we didn't go on field trips very often, but when you did, I think the significance of how much you learned in kind of in a different way, so it stuck with you, I think, over time, makes a huge difference. And watching kids coming to the site and, you know, putting their toes in the mud and getting to see, you know, native species returning, getting to be a part of a place, I think affects us kind of at the cellular level. And really, I think, contributes to education in a way that I think is hard without having this kind of living classroom.
Sure. Well, and maybe this is a question for all three of our guests today. You know, this is an area where you all have personal investment and have been working in for quite some time. What does this feel like for you, getting this designation and seeing these additional resources being put into this place that you are invested in? Christina, let's start with you.
I think when we were designated, like it was about a 5-year process. And I think people were surprised that we were able to get through that process in 5 years. And 5 years sounds like a long time. But I think
not for federal management.
Yes. Yes, that is true. But I think in the reserve system, we probably have the record for getting through it the fastest. So at the end of that, you know, we were only able to get through it, I think, because we had such support. And I think we had so many people working together with the momentum in the same direction. So sure. I think just having it designated at the very end was such a relief. And I think people could not get me to stop saying, we are the 29th.
Lucky 29. Excellent. What about you, Koa?
Hope really is about hope. There's so many issues that are coming up with our ocean and our land management, or land in Hawaii in general. And when organizations and communities can come together as one, it gives me hope that we might be able to make the right decisions for the future for our children. So when so many things are kind of, it's an interesting time.
It is.
we need to have hope and dreams that we can make the world better. So that's what I hope.
Absolutely. There's a lot of political craziness happening right now. It's really nice to hear some positive stories.
Yes. Yeah. For our future, for our kids. So.
Yeah. What about you, Rob?
I'm sort of drawn back to the very first time I went out in Heia with Koa and Hiile, and they dragged me out through the mangroves trying to find the fish pond wall, and it was a challenge. I remember going through and sort of walking through the mangroves to try and find where the fish pond wall was. And to now go out there and see the restoration and to see the fish pond wide open like that and to take my kids out with Koa and dig up those fields of invasive California grass so that they can plant loikalo again is something that I find incredibly important for my family, for myself, and to be able to have that interaction with the place, I think, is really important for kids to see that they are part of this landscape and that it matters what the choices they make in their life, because otherwise, without that connection, a lot of people make bad choices.
Yeah. Well, it's truly inspiring to hear all of your individual connections and to hear about the efforts from the community. I really wish all of you amazing success with this project. And because it's such a great group of community partners, I know it will be a successful program. Where can people learn more if they want to go online or connect with people to be able to learn more or get involved?
So right now, because we have just been designated, we do not have an official Hay and Years website yet, but there are locations. The oceanservice.noaa.gov, www.nera.org, and the Hawaii State GIS Maps actually has a virtual tour online. So anyone who wants to find one of those locations can.
And then www.kakooiwi.org and paipaiohe'ea. Just punch it in.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, all of you, for coming in today and talking about this important movement forward. Want to thank all of our guests as well as our sponsor, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.